St. Bridget of Kildare is someone who means a lot of different things to different people. She's a patron saint of Ireland, a figure of devotion for many. To others, she's the Celtic goddess of pre-Christian Ireland. She's also a symbol of female empowerment and a feminist icon. It's purportedly been about 1,500 years since Bridget of Kildare died. And as part of the ongoing Bridget 1500 programme of events from Kildare County Council, the Bridget's Worlds Conference is taking place at Maynooth University this coming Friday and Saturday, the 13th and 14th of September. I'm joined by Maynooth University's Dr. Niamh Witcherly, a medieval historian in the Department of Early Irish, specialising in the Early Irish Church. You're very welcome indeed, Niamh, to the History Show.
Thanks a million for having me.
Now, Bridget is someone who's been enjoying a huge resurgence of popularity recently. We're all very grateful to her for the public holiday in her name. In recent years, though, you've been on a mission to show that we should really be celebrating not the goddess, not the miracle-working saint, but the flesh and blood woman.
Yeah, in actual fact, I'd say celebrating the goddess is fantastic. Celebrating the saint is equally fantastic. It's actually that kind of third element, the real woman, that flesh and blood human being. That's, you know, the Bridget that I feel has been slightly kind of forgotten about in all of the devotions and commemorations and everything around Bridget over the last couple of years. So this conference that we have coming up in Maynooth on Friday and Saturday, we're really getting back to that earliest history of when Bridget lived, when she was first remembered, and her early Church of Kildare, that early foundation, which went on to become one of the biggest and most influential institutions in the country. This was, you know, a kind of a pre-Dublin time where, you know, Dublin didn't really exist per se. You know, I mean, it did, but all roads lead to Dublin, kind of in Ireland now a little bit. And this is a time when, you know, more of the roads were leading towards Kildare. The Kildare was a big deal. And we don't explore that enough in many ways in Irish history.
Now, I think her Dictionary of Irish Biography entry more or less suggests that she is a myth. As a person, she is a myth. And, you know, I mean, you were a sceptic at one stage yourself, weren't you?
I was, because, you know, I think it's important for people to understand that history is a science. You know, it's an iterative process. We build on the work of people that went before us, you know, and we're all also influenced by it. When you start out and you're a student and you follow the people that came before you, and then as you kind of grow in, you know, confidence yourself, you are able to maybe challenge, you know, earlier ideas and notions. And the more I got into, just really, to be honest, Miles, over the last few years, when I've been asked to kind of talk about Bridget in so many different forums, you know, so many different fora, you know, to community engagement and also academic events and to the media, I really had to reflect on what I really thought about the historical Bridget. And that was one of the things that actually started to annoy me. I was like, wait now, I was sold a pup and everyone was slightly sold a pup in that Bridget was very much so real. And we really need to, get rid of that notion that she wasn't. And we can actually, some of us will be kind of looking into that in the conference. Actually, we have this amazing public lecture on the Friday evening at 8 p.m. in Maynooth University. So everybody, please come in. It's free. There's some drinks and nibbles beforehand. And there's a lecture by Harvard professor Catherine McKenna. And what she's going to really be looking at in that lecture is, what do we know about Bridget? You know, so the knowns and the unknowns, and where a lot of the stories we have about her, where did they actually come from? And it's brilliant. You know, she traces some very specific stories and says, actually, we can see that this was a story that was really only generated in the 1800s, or this was a story that was generated in the 1600s. This was a story that was generated in the 1200s or the 1100s. And she goes back through them and it's brilliant. And the main thing is that so many of those stories actually don't go back to the time that Bridget lived, or the time when she really started, when we get a lot of texts written about her in the 7th century, so in the 600s. So they're kind of their later stories about Bridget, and they muddy the water a little bit. So they're brilliant and they're amazing traditions. But what we want to try and get back to here is, okay, let's, you know, peel back the layers and let's figure out actually that earliest history of Bridget.
Okay, well, we'll talk about the evidence such as it is in a moment. But talk to me first of all about Bridget, the Celtic goddess.
It's hard to talk about that because we just don't really have a lot of evidence for it. in medieval Ireland. We just don't. So it's really tricky for me to say anything about it. That doesn't mean that there wasn't a pre-Christian. I mean, you say Celtic, it's hard to use that term. It's a very difficult term. It's only really suitable when you're talking about languages, you know, like Celtic speaking peoples. We don't know anything of like a religion or, you know, different kind of social practices. And, you know, we're limited. So Celtic is tricky. I think we should use terms like Irish, you know, or Welsh, or even, you know, things like in the area around 7th century Kildare, for example, you know, a term like Celtic, it's a big term that kind of it rubs away all the complexity.
But she was venerated. There was somebody who was venerated in pre-Christian Ireland, wasn't there?
We don't have any evidence for it. That doesn't mean there wasn't. We just don't have any evidence for it. And all the earliest references we have to kind of Bridget are references to a Saint Bridget. Now, listen, we do have, like my professor, David Stifter, the head of my school in Maynooth University, he's going to be getting into that a little bit in the conference and that name, where that name Brigh and Brigid and Bridget, where that comes from. But we're limited. Kind of our first really clear written testimony to any kind of pre-Christian goddess with the name Bridget is in the early 9th century. And in that text, and it's an amazing text, Cormac's Glossary, he, in another section, he talks about the Saint Bridget as well. So he doesn't conflate the two. They're two very different things. It's just hard. We just don't have any evidence for it, so it's difficult to talk about it.
Okay, what do we know about her family background, her kin group, the kin group called the Fothearts, if I'm pronouncing it correctly?
Yeah, exactly. The Fothearts, you know, they, in all the earliest texts and the traditions associated with Bridget, the Bridget I know, you know, the Bridget who founded the Church of Kildare, they all say that she's part of that wider kind of dynastic group. They were based kind of like, kind of almost from maybe what's modern day Offaly, further east. It encompassed the area around what today is Kildare. They were a part of kind of an aristocratic group, but they weren't really like the big deal, like the big political power players at the time. So it is quite interesting that all the sources are very consistent in associating them with her.
You'd assume she would have to have come from a family of some substance in order to become an abbess, wouldn't you?
Yeah, well, so...
Or would you?
Yeah, well, no... I think you had different roots, in fairness. I think people had different roots to kind of, if we want to talk about like ecclesiastical power, a lot of the abbesses and the abbots and the bishops and everything that we have in the Irish Church, they were well connected. They were perhaps related in some shape or form to, you know, the aristocracy, to the ruling, to the kings and queens. In terms of so the abbesses of Kildare, the women who followed Bridget in Kildare, a lot of them are very well connected and aristocratic. Bridget herself, she, you know, the earliest texts say that she was the daughter. They're very consistent in that she's the daughter of a nobleman. Now, whether she herself would have had a title as grand as abbess, you know, it's difficult to know. What we do know is that so she supposedly died around the year 524. We know by the early 600s that the abbess of Kildare she was a big deal.
And the fact that she actually becomes an abbess, she is a woman in a particular society, a society governed by the Breton laws. What was the status of a woman in that society? One gets a sense that women had some status, at least in pre-Christian Irish society and immediately post-Christian Irish society.
Yeah. So again. What I'm learning, the more and more I study Bridget, why she is like the best topic in so many ways, is that there's so much complexity there as the position of women in the church and the women in Irish society. Unfortunately, women, to some extent, women's history has been kind of ignored by scholars, and we really need to correct that. So I might have a different answer to that question for you in a few years' time.
Because
there's lots of exciting research going on. But what the law texts tell us, so you refer to it as the Breton law, we kind of know it as early Irish law because it was the only law system there. The term Breton really, it marks out Irish law in the later period against English common law, you know. But in early Ireland, in the society that Bridget would have been living in and her subsequent abbesses, women had really limited legal status. They were very much tied in with their male kin. Their worth, their legal worth, you know, was judged as half that as their, of their closest male relative. So you have to understand then, this was a highly stratified society as well as a patriarchal one. So the mother of a king or the wife of a king, the daughter of a king, actually has a really high status in society because she's half the worth of her closest male relative. Whereas a male slave has no influence and he's just a piece of property. So it's not just gender that's going on. You know, there's status and understanding the laws has to be taken into consideration. But it's just, it's really impressive when we read of all of the women, and there are many in fairness that, that haven't been adequately studied. Any woman that comes through those medieval sources in Ireland, they were really important, influential women who were getting a lot done. And what is fairly consistent is that the abbesses of Kildare, that they potentially were the highest status woman, the most influential woman in Ireland at any given time. And that's really impressive given how limited their legal status and their capacity and even things like they're considered biased witnesses in the law and in the courts, you know, and that women weren't generally given the ability to, you know, buy and sell land and inherit land that they could then pass on to their own children. So it's a very patriarchal and hierarchical society.
Now, evidence, sources, hard to come by, obviously, for this period. You're talking about something 1,500 years ago. One of the sources that is that is quoted, and I know you're particularly interested in and keen on, is The Life of Bridget by a man called Cogitosus. Can we trust The Life of Bridget by Cogitosus, given that it was written in the 7th century, like 150 years after her supposed death?
So again, there's a lot to that question. We can't, if we want to use a word like trust, there's two things to it. First of all, we have to understand what kind of text it is, what it's aiming to do. So these kind of lives of saints, it's, the genre is called hagiography, which means holy writing. It's kind of like holy biographies. They're a very distinct form of literature. They're the most popular literature in the Middle Ages. And they're stories. Right? They're stories. They're not historical documents. They're not purporting to relate historical facts. Now, they do often, incidentally, but that's not their main aim. Their main aim is to be like a highly sophisticated, well-crafted story with a really beautiful beginning, middle and end, a structure that fits into, you know, the wider genre. But when you're talking about the time discrepancy, you know, that it's written so long after Bridget lived, as all of these texts are, actually, in fairness, when it comes to these texts in general, Cogitosus is potentially one of the closest, actually, that was written in terms of from the saint. So the lives that we have of Patrick are even at a further remove from Patrick. But yes, he's not going to tell us a whole lot about Bridget, what she was like, her personality, how she actually lived. But I do think Cogitosus tells us a good bit about how women in his time were living and how women in the Church of Kildare were living. And
which wouldn't have been radically different from a century and a half before.
Yeah, perhaps not. Exactly. One of the things we do probably have the same legal system in place. We can see from the archaeology what matches up and what doesn't. And that's what's really important here is that medieval historians, you know, you're kind of like detectives, you know, you're matching together, you're gathering together so much evidence and you're seeing what corroborates, what contradicts. You can't just look at one type of evidence. You have to look at the archaeology, the material. Material evidence, the linguistic evidence is really important, and all of the available written sources you have in Latin and in Old Irish. So it's really exciting, but you have to do a lot to bring all of those sources together to give you then build up this picture of what was actually happening.
Now, there's also an interesting context to this, a kind of a super context, if you like, and that is the animosity, the dispute, the struggle for dominance between Kildare and Armagh. Just talk to me about that a little.
Yeah, so that is one thing that scholars who've studied Bridget or Patrick, indeed Patrick, the battle between, and I'm using the word battle, but the battle between Kildare and Armagh and perhaps also Iona for kind of primacy, for rulership, headship of the Irish Church in the 7th century has taken up a lot of our attention as scholars. And that was necessary. You know, it was a really big thing that went on in the 7th century, which is why now I think it's a good time to, OK, let's we've established what was going on with this battle for the head of the church, and let's look at some other areas. But essentially, in the, let's say, perhaps around the year 600, it wasn't clear maybe which church was actually the head of all. So ultimately, what church became, like, you know, the arch, you know, the archbishopric, let's say, in Ireland, or the main church that communicated with Rome. And we have correspondence between the Irish church and Rome. And you have letters that represent all of the Irish church, and they're signed by all the different, or they reference all the different leaders of the different churches in Ireland. And there needs to be one main church that it's coming from. And ultimately, Armagh is who wins out. But it was touch and go there for a while. And Kildare really gave Armagh a run for their money. And one of the things that they used to great effect was devotion to Bridget, and was that people were coming from far and wide to come into Kildare to venerate the tombs of Bridget and her her Bishop Conlade. And that is kind of, you know, to bring back to the conference a little bit.
The bodies are actually in the church.
But yeah, the bodies were in the church at that time. We see that those relics of the veneration of relics, saints' relics, was a massive part of the medieval church. It still is in many respects today. You know, you're able to feel that connection. Like, there's Bridget. She's not just a remote individual. She's someone who's close to me. I can go, I can visit her. You know, she's very much real and alive and part of the community. And we see that then relatively quickly we have references to the devotion to Bridget of Kildare's relics on the continent, you know, as early perhaps as 700 AD. So this veneration to this Bridget of Kildare, it spread quite quickly around Europe at the time.
So, I mean, Kildare was a kind of a happening spot, therefore, in the 7th century.
That's what I say, it was a hot spot. It was a hot spot of 7th century Ireland. It really was. It was, you know, come to Kildare. Cogitosis in particular is really promoting that side of things. He says, we have feasting, lots of crack to be had. You can, you know, you can catch up with people that you haven't seen in a while. You can have a good time, but you can also pray in the church, and you can venerate at the tomb of Bridget. And that's why I'm personally anyway kind of using this conference that's coming up to continue that tradition, you know, that kind of like maybe 1400 year tradition of, you know, come in, you know, we want to show you some hospitality, we want to show off our research a little bit and talk to you and engage with the public and give you a drink and, you know, a bit of something to eat and let's have the chats. And
I mean, you're a big advocate of bringing medieval history to a broader audience. You do a podcast, the Medieval Irish History Podcast. Are there challenges in communicating this era of history to an audience?
There are, but actually in some respects, it's easier, I find, I think, than my historian colleagues who study other periods of history. Because the second I start saying, when someone asks me what I do, everybody instantly reacts to, oh, yeah, cool, I went to Glendalough last weekend for a hike, or I went on the Viking Splash Tour, or, you know, something to do with the Vikings, or something through, I visited Clonmount Noise, or actually there's a holy well by my house. Or, you know, in a lot of ways, people in Ireland, and even tourists visiting Ireland, this is the period of history that we're synonymous with.
We're not that far removed
right?
from it.
No, but you know, like, it's our so-called golden age, and it's, you know, it's the Island of Saints and Scholars, but we all have some connection with it. We can see the Roth on the hill, and we can, you know, see, we can connect with so many. It's really part of our landscape. It's part of our history, whether you roll your eyes or not, perhaps it's something, you know, everybody enjoys, like St. Patrick's Day. Everybody's going to, I think Bridget's Day is going to be, that's feast day, that's going to be the big one, because we're all dying for a long weekend after the winter. It's going to be really interesting to see how people celebrate that. So we love going back to this period of our history constantly. So in a way, it's an easy sell for me. You know, I haven't ever had many difficulties, to be honest, in a lot of ways, you know, getting funding or kind of promoting my research, or, you know, talking to communities and giving kind of public talks, because people are into it. The challenges are communicating that this, as I said, it's a science. We have to use the sources in the way in which they were written. You know, you do get people kind of co-opting this period of history, not just in Ireland, but in elsewhere, to kind of push maybe, you know, kind of extreme agendas, you know, kind of far right and kind of different things. And it is quite concerning.
White slavery.
There's so much going on. And I feel, and as well with our relationship now, currently with our neighbours in Britain and in the EU and America, kind of understanding our own colonial past and understanding what Irish society was actually like before the English came in, understanding that, we had kings and queens and lords and ladies and a very complex society. It wasn't this beautiful
Alice Stopford Green environment.
Right. Yeah, exactly. You know, and what Alice Stopford Green and others, what they were doing, you know, in the Gaelic Revival and at the end of the 1800s and the early 1900s, it was very specific to a particular, you know, political and cultural time. And it's amazing everything that they achieved. But we don't need to, you know, repeat stuff from the late 1800s and early 1900s now. We've so many scientific developments and technological developments, you know, in our own work. I'm able to just now, the digitization of manuscripts, you know, I don't have to go and necessarily travel to Oxford or to France or anything to go and see manuscripts. I can view them online. I can zoom in. We've so many advancements now, so many advancements in archaeology. We're making new discoveries the whole time. So, you know, we don't have to repeat the same things. And in fairness, we're not in our own field. But I do feel like we need to communicate those advancements maybe a little bit clearer to the wider public.
Well, you have certainly communicated your enthusiasm. The conference is called Bridges Worlds. It's taking place this Friday and Saturday, 13th and 14th of September at Maynooth University. Find out more at bridget1500.ie/events. And we'll also put a link to the booking page on our own website. My guest is the organiser, Dr. Niamh Witcherly. Niamh, many thanks indeed for joining us this evening.
Thanks a million.